Unveiling the secrets A-list copywriters use to make themselves and their clients millions. This is the Copywriters Podcast with your host, the world's greatest copywriting coach, David Garfinkel.
We're going to get real about AI from two grizzled vets who have seen tech boom and bust after tech boom and bust and aren't swooning about the latest and greatest gizmos. Our returning champion is top copywriter, copy chief, and publishing exec, Aaron Gensler. Aaron knows his way around the written word, AI, and the tech community behind AI. I'm the other grizzled vet. I know you're going to think I'm old when I say this, but I was making a living writing before there was an internet. Now, Aaron and I had a frank, casual conversation last week about AI, what's real and what's ridiculous. And we came up with such good practical ideas for anyone who writes copy or uses copy in their business that we decided to expand our conversation into a show today. Before we do, let me expound on this. Copy is powerful. You're responsible for what you hear in this podcast, and most of the time, common sense is all you need. But if you make extreme claims and if you're writing copy for offers in highly regulated industries like health, finance, and business opportunity, you may want to get a legal review after you write and before you start using your copy. My larger clients do this all the time. So, Aaron, great to see you again. And how are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me back. I was blown away, in a way, by the conversation you and I had last week. We were just catching up. It had been some months since we spoke, and all of a sudden it's half an hour's gone by and we're talking about AI and how to use it and what's good and what's bad and what are the opportunities. So I'm glad that you invited me back. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Oh yeah, for sure. Me too. Let's talk about the way most people use AI. And I guess this gets a little meta or a little intellectual, but the assumptions behind it. I'll dive into the assumptions in a second, okay? But you said something very interesting about using AI to write a piece of crap just to get you started as opposed to staring at a screen.
Yeah, the conversations that we've been having in our business, there was actually a colleague that said it to me some weeks ago first, was you do all the research, you feel as though you prepare, and then sometimes no matter your best efforts or how much preparation you've put in, you're staring at the blank document, you're staring at the cursor, and you have ideas in mind, but it's just not popping out onto the page yet. I've found, and I've spoken to other people too, that they're using AI, a set of data, a set of assumptions, of prompts, to create a completely terrible, unworkable, very low bar first draft. It's not anything close to what you're going to publish. It's not anything close to what's going to meet live fire, but it at least gets you moving. And if it's just 5% of the work of beginning to create the first draft, to bring the idea forward, to bring the idea to life, AI is useful in that sense. And you look as recently as 6 months ago, AI was, it was going to eliminate jobs. It was going to do all this work for us. It was going to be the invention that, you know, it's the singularity in a way, because now there's an intelligence that sits over top of human effort and it combines forces and it's going to bring all these. And like you and I talked about last week, that's all probably going to happen at some point. We're just nowhere near that right now. So it's a tool, it's a hammer. And in the hands of an amateur, that hammer can be very dangerous and it can lead you down roads that lead nowhere good. And in the hands of a skilled craftsman or someone who knows how to utilize that tool, AI today, as it exists, even though it will get better, and, you know, there's the issues with Gemini this week, and you know Matt Taibbi's piece recently. Like there are terrible and drastic downsides to the AI as it's been presented to us thus far and what's available. But if you're smart, if you're tactical, and you're using it the right ways, my belief is it has a lot of potential as well, and we should be leaning into that.
Yeah, I agree. I remember back around the turn of the century, right at the height, maybe at the beginning of the dot-com boom before the dot-bomb, there was this guy on a national TV news show who said, every business has to be on the internet. Physical businesses will cease to exist. And he was dead serious. And they were giving him national publicity. And that would mean that the corner store a block from me that sells candy and cigarettes cannot exist. And yet it does. How could that be? You know, and you just hear this over and over again. I think you were reminiscing how VSLs were going to put an end to HTML sales letters.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
They haven't. And some people say VSLs don't work anymore. So, it's crazy. Now, I have a whole nother way of looking at it. And did I tell you about the Winston Churchill method of writing?
I believe you mentioned it, but go ahead. It's worth saying again. So go ahead, please.
Yeah. So don't know if this is actually true, but there's a story that the way Churchill would write, he would get drunk, he would get naked, he would get in the bath, and then his secretary would come in and he would dictate. I'm sure part of that's true. And it may have, like the game of telephone, it may have been embellished over the years. So there's an interesting thought. He didn't give his secretary a prompt and say, hey, write me 500 words in my voice. He told her what he wanted to say. And what I've been experimenting with and having great success with is figuring out how to get the AI to ask me one question at a time. Now, coming up with the questions is important. And knowing how to get AI to do something is important. It's kind of, you have to experiment with it, but it's pretty simple. Like, I want you to ask me this question. And when I answer, I want you to ask me the question again. And when I answer, do that till we've had 12 questions and answers. I mean, you really have to spell it out. Most people aren't even good at following instructions exactly. So giving exact instructions is probably hard too. But what I found, I was able to create 5 little chunks for another podcast a guy invited me on using that pretty much with the responses I gave. Now, I've got an advantage. I've been writing professionally for half a decade, and I teach people and I coach people and yada, 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 yada. But I still think it's important for the writing to be in your voice and not the AI's voice. Now, I saw a few things after we talked and before this podcast, after we talked last week and before today on Twitter that I thought were fantastic and really important. So there's Paul Graham, and he's, Y Combinator. He was really big in Silicon Valley. He's also an author and quite a good writer. And he has this sort of droll British comment in that he's British and droll. Current AIs have at least solved the problem of watermarking AI-generated answers. Watermarking meaning identifying it so you'll know that it's AI-generated. Their bland doublespeak is nothing like a normal human would write. And he says, here's the real problem, though. Most people find writing hard and will get AIs to do it for them whenever they can get away with it, which means bland doublespeak will become the default writing style. Ugh. Well, as copywriters, we can't afford that. Yeah.
That's the opportunity. I'm glad that you put it that way, that you read that, because that's the opportunity. So some months ago, it was, oh my God, all the juniors are going to be gone and legal and, all the fears and everything that was out there. And again, to a certain extent, that may be true. I keep saying this. People that are in the business right now, people that understand ethical persuasion, people who understand true emotional connection, people who understand how to reach across time and space with the words and the offers and putting the right ideas in the right order, people who understand what it takes to actually compel conversion, to capture and maintain interest, are going to be just fine. Because the double speak, the blank, the mashed potatoes that you get out of AIs improper prompting, or however you want to say it, it's not going to convert. And again, I understand I'm taking a risk here, but it's not going to convert on mass scale anytime soon, because an artisan, a craftsperson, a person who understands, like I said, the true techniques of persuasion, is going to have an advantage for a significant period of time. I say that fully recognizing just how powerful a tool and innovation this will become, and the assistance that it will give many industries, ours included, of course. But you said something else a second ago too. I just want to go back to about like the turn of the millennium, where it was, you know, if your business isn't online, we're not going to have a business. And then you mentioned the shop, you know, down the corner that sells, you know, sundries. And I think during times of, and again, I'm no expert, but I've worked in tech, and I've worked with tech gurus for many years. And something that I've heard, and I think moments like this is an important moment to recognize it, pay attention to it, is that during times of technological upheaval, everybody vacates the middle and we go to these polar opposite views. This is either the best thing that's ever happened, or this is the most frightening, potentially destructive thing that's ever happened. But then you look back on tech adoption as these moments of upheaval begin to make their way into society, and you can say, you know, broadband internet, 5G technology, the internet itself, whatever, however you want to frame it. Technology has a tendency to be additive over time and not necessarily be a process of elimination. There are eliminations that take place, of course, right? Which increases efficiency, increases wealth potential. And you know, overall, many of these tech advances that we look back on were enormously additive for productivity, for happiness, for wealth. And if we can all kind of just keep our heads, you know, together here and keep our heads screwed on straight during these early phases, these early steps of AI, I think we'll get to that point as well. It's the danger for me right now is expecting, like you said, expecting too much of it, expecting it to be too good too fast, because that's where we're going to get ourselves in big trouble and we're going to miss chances to, in our case, connect with prospects.
Really good points. And there's one other thing I saw on Twitter I want to throw out, and this is from Mark Andreessen. He invented, co-created, what was it called? Mosaic, which was like the first graphic internet browser. And now he's talking about something I really don't want to get into because it's very political and very loaded. And so what he's going to be talking about here is Gemini and some of the stuff that's come out of there that where they think it might be politically incorrect to criticize Genghis Khan, right? I mean, yeah. It's just like, geez. But think about this from the point of view of writing. He says, I know it's hard to believe, but big tech AI generates the output it does because it is precisely executing the specific ideological, radical, biased agenda of its creators. This apparently bizarre output is 100% intended. It is working as designed. And if we take that as true, and I think he knows what he's talking about, and I tend to agree with him, it's also true that AI is writing as it was programmed to write. And you can train it all you want, but there's an underlying way of writing and way of thinking that's built into it that I don't think you can change. So I think if you can get AI to pull words out of you by just having a conversation like you were texting or something, I think you'll get better results. You know, we had a really interesting conversation. I have a strong interest in film, drama, screenwriting. You have a background in it, a master's degree in screenwriting. I think you've acted in movies. So you kind of understand that world. And I saw something. I think it's a really good show. It's been going for 25 years, Law & Order SVU. And it's 2 minutes. I'm going to read you the dialogue and describe it. And I have a couple questions. One is, could AI ever write this? And two is, do you think an AI could understand it? Because I found 9 objectives. Some of these objectives come out of playwriting drama 101. Some of them are a little more subtle. Let me just go through it. It's sort of fun. And it all revolves around a plate, freshly made, beautiful, plump, colorful donuts. All right. And it's the second scene of the show. And so you're in the break room where they eat. There's a plate of beautiful, colorful donuts on the table. And Finn, who's the kind of tough guy, investigator, walks up to another guy named Velasco, and he says, Velasco, since when do you make donuts? Velasco, I don't. and a woman named Curry walks into the room. She says, "I made them." She extends her hand to introduce herself to Velasco. "Renee Curry." Velasco, "Joe Velasco." Finn walks in and says, accusingly, "Curry's IAB." You know, IAB, the cops on the cops, the internal affairs bureau. And Curry says, "Used to be. I hope Benson told you that I was joining the squad." And Finn says, "I imagine that took some string pulling." Curry says, "Yeah, it did." Finn says, "Aren't you a captain?" Curry says, "Look, I'm not interested in pulling rank around here, and I was hoping we could be..." Finn says, "What?" And she says, "Friends." And Finn says, "I don't make friends with internal affairs, but I am going to eat one of your donuts under protest." And so he picks it up, and she says, "I can respect that." And then he gets in her face. He says, "Well, respect this. I got Benson's back, first, last, and always." Benson is his boss, is the head of the department, and the one who Curry was investigating before she found Benson was clean as a whistle and decided to join the squad. So you can see all the dramatic tension, all this stuff going on, right? So Finn walks out of the squad room, holding the donut on a napkin. He hasn't taken a bite. And then Finn walks right up, gets in his boss's face, Benson, and says, "When were you planning on telling me about Curry?" And Benson says, "I gave you the heads up." Finn says, "You did?" Benson says, "Yeah, I did, Finn. You don't listen. And I got approval, so don't worry." Finn says, "From?" And Benson says, "McGrath, who do you think?" And Finn says, "He did you one last favor before he stepped down." Benson walks up to Finn, takes the donut out of his hand, and says to him, "How come you never bring me baked goods?" Finn says, "Why is there another captain here?" Benson says, "Because Curry needed a change." Finn then makes a reference to a detective who left, a woman, Amanda Rollins, and he says, "And you needed a Rollins." And Benson says, "Curry's looking to prove herself, not as a captain and not as an IAB suit, and certainly not as a replacement for Amanda." And then she starts to bite into the donut. And Finn says, "And she actually wants to be an SVU investigator? I don't have to take orders from her?" Benson says, "No, but you have to be nice to her." And then there's a pause, and she's staring into this cardboard box and just ruffling through it. And Finn says, "What are you doing?" And she goes, I know. I haven't been myself in weeks." Then someone rushes in with an urgent message and change of scene. Believe me, it's a lot more entertaining when you see the actors do it than my table read. But the scene is 2 minutes, 350 words of dialogue. And here's what you get when you're watching it. You learn Curry's name. She's a new member of the squad. We're also reminded of the names of the regular characters. That's something you're taught to do in a play. Velasco, Finn, Benson, and there are other characters referred to. We find out that Finn is suspicious and feels threatened. He's insecure. Now, I want to stop on number three there, because in an AI, you would have, if he's writing dialogue for Finn, and we'll talk about this in a minute more, he'd say, "I'm suspicious. What's going on here?" But he didn't do it that way. He demonstrated by his actions, and it seemed very natural, and you learn about his character, and it's entertaining, because people are like, do that kind of stuff in real life. Four, we find out Benson likes donuts enough to take a fresh donut right out of Finn's hands. Five, we find out how Curry transitioned from IAB. Six, we find out Curry doesn't get to order Finn around, even though she's a captain, but the way Benson runs her group, and this is so important emotionally, she expects everyone to get along. I mean, there's some people have a team of rivals idea, not her. She wants everyone to get along. Seven, we find out Benson is going through some kind of crisis, doesn't know what to do. Eight, the donuts are beautiful, plump, colorful, and have sprinkles. And symbolically, they do a lot of work. First, the whole cops and donuts thing. But secondly, yep, they show Curry is making a peace offering after being an IAB bad guy before. And third, we find out Finn wants the donut more than he hates IAB. So he says he'll take the donut under protest. And number 11, when Benson takes the donut out of Finn's hand and takes a bite out of it, we find out that she's the boss. Now, to me, that's some great screenwriting. Okay. And it was all in 2 minutes. Now, before we talk about the one thing that that you and I really found so important, not only for screening, but for copywriting. I had the scene transcribed on Otter AI, and Aaron, you told me there was a summary tab, which I did not know about, and you're not used to seeing it. And so Otter AI did an automatic summary without even me asking of this scene. You want to hear what it is? It's not going to take very long.
Yeah,
donuts, curry, donuts, curry, and rank in a police squad. What? Unknown speaker makes donuts for a curry, sparking a conversation about rank and respect. No, the big problem with AI, both in writing and in analyzing stuff, and this is more in copywriting and certainly in fiction and drama than it is in business, in left brain logical stuff, is the combination of context and emotion and implication, the underlying stuff versus on the nose stuff. That's what I was talking about when I said you wouldn't have Finn saying, I'm suspicious. What's going on here? I'm feeling a little insecure, right? You wouldn't have him say that.
Yeah. There's so many different points at which the tension rises, and then there's a denouement of some kind. There's a someone wants something, someone wants to understand something, someone wants to write it inside that 2-minute scene that you read. I mean, that's the dramatic structure, right? You know, there's an inciting incident, rising tension. There has to be a resolution. You exist on the other side of that in a plane that you were not in before. But therefore, the story continues, right? Something else is at stake, something else is bigger. Right. So you could, like, from a programmatic standpoint, you could give AI that information and it could give you some possibly okay representation of that. But then when you just summarize the dramatic structure of what took place, there was donuts, there was a conversation. We talked about friendship and respect and trust. And right. So this is deep. Like the way I like to use a summary for me, useful exercise of summary in some of these platforms is you and I are having this conversation. I take the audio, it's listening in the background, right? And then it gives us a transcript and a summary afterward. And it's like, these were David's major points on XYZ. This is what Aaron had to say about ABC. And then I can be like, okay, now I can file that away and I can refer to it without going back through and watching the entire conversation that David and I had. I like to use it to confirm what I'm thinking about in the summary functions of these two. Well, I like to use it to confirm in the moments immediately following that what it's giving me conforms to my own understanding of the conversation that just took place. If it is, it kind of gets the check mark. I save it. I paste it in. I save it. And I'm like, I can always go back to that because I trust that it's an accurate representation of what David said, what his points were, what I felt like I had to contribute to the conversation. Yeah, but you just like to ask it to understand the subtlety, the nuance, and the moment that the performer brings to, and this goes for persuasion too, like on a page, like how the proof points line up to get me to the point where I'm nodding along and now I'm ready. Now you're ready for my wallet, right? Now I'm like, oh my God, I finally get it. Yes, I must have XYZ product. It's just not there. And maybe someday it will be, but we're not there yet. And I think what you just did, that exercise, it's a perfect representation of how far we have to come. So we respect it, we use it, but we realize how far we have to go.
Thanks. And, you know, if you take chain of beliefs or chain of logic, it's the same thing. You can like map it out as very surface level, explicit, conscious, rational points, but actually executing it, that takes some craft. That takes some emotional experience, imagination, understanding of how conversations really work, including the conversation in your prospect's mind. AI can't do that part. But like you said, it's a huge time saver in terms of taking a large mass of material and extracting the key points and outlining the structure, which is a different kind of job and very important for a copywriter, very important for a product creator. I mean, you were telling me about a product you're working on, which we'll be talking about again in a few weeks, and you had hours of transcripts that you needed to have summarized, and you were able to do that quickly with AI, right?
Yeah, the project that Sean Twing and I are working on, and as a follow-on to the two offers that we put out last year, tens of thousands of words of content and the images that we've shown in these lesson modules that we've created. And I want, as a teacher is not the right word, but as to helping people write better copy, helping people, and you know this, you and I talk about this, helping people write better copy, think more clearly about their offers. I want to be able to go back when I was in a, when I was in one of those live training environments with folks who had paid real money for our advice and analysis. I wanted to make sure day over day, module over module, that number one, what I said made sense. Number two, that it landed well. And number three, that I could take what I had already said and continue to build on it to help those people continue to progress, to continue to build new skills. And it was enormously helpful for me to have like immediate return, like these summaries that I'm talking about, and then to be able to compare it. Like it needs, this is an important point. It's the tools that are available right now are not completist. They cannot do work for you, but they can supplement the quality of your work that you're already doing. So with human review, with a check, right, I can be like, oh, I really appreciate that it pointed that out to me, that I spent 2 minutes back there an hour and a half ago talking about XYZ, because that's something I can build on in the next one. So yeah, Sean and I, we've been experimenting with these tools, and he even more than I, he's a savant with some of this stuff. He's had some fantastic breakthroughs with some of these tools. But yeah, I don't ask it to do any, I guess the good way to sum it up is I'm not asking any of these tools to do anything I'm not already doing myself. And I'm not asking it to do anything that I'm not then sitting over top of and checking 100% for accuracy and an accurate representation of what I intended.
Yeah, let me drill down on one thing you said, because I think it's so important and you didn't gloss over it, but I just want to explore it a little more. So you say you're giving a class or you're doing a session and you want to make sure that, you know, what you say made sense and that you covered all the points you wanted to cover and so forth. So you feed the audio into a transcriber and then you feed the transcription into an AI that summarizes it for you and breaks it down to bullet points and so forth. So casually, you could say, well, I'm just using AI for quality control, but you're not. You're the one who's doing the quality control. You're not asking AI, hey, in your infinite knowledge and wisdom, could you tell me, did I say what I should have said and did I miss anything? No, you're the one who's doing that. You're using AI to put it in a form so you can do that. But if you depended on AI to do that, it might not do a very good job. And it might inject some kind of bias that you don't want into there.
That's exactly right. I'm glad that you brought that. You brought a specific highlight to that, because that's a good way to encapsulate it. Now think about that as a research model. If I'm out there and I'm conducting interviews to learn more about a prospect universe, I'm talking to, I don't know, the manufacturing team at XYZ factory that makes the widget that I'm supposed to try to figure out how to sell, right? Any kind of research like that, if I'm using the tools to benefit my further learning and understanding of what it's going to take for me to successfully position this and do my job, but I'm sitting over top of that process, I'm the one who's actually farming the takeaways and making sure, like you said it better than now, I'm going on a different road. But yeah, the ultimate quality control has to rest with the creator. You cannot ask the tool to do something in a completist sense for you, because it is not capable.
I like to boil it down to a bumper sticker. Don't let the AI do your thinking for you. That's your job. You know, it can do a lot of the scut work, but you got to do thinking.
Print that. Get that bumper sticker printed. Get that on your Etsy shop. That's a business right there. Don't let the AI fill in the blank. Don't let it do this. Don't let it do that. I think we got a business.
I don't know. That would be kind of like in Baltimore, putting out a bumper sticker that says, don't eat crabs, they're bad for you.
Yeah, the crab lobby in Baltimore.
I live in San Francisco. That would be very dangerous to my health. I don't know if I could do that, but maybe I will.
Watch out.
We'll see.
Yeah, no, I get excited. I get excited talking to people, just catching up with folks, like folks in the industry or people in different niches. What are you doing? How are you using it? What are you seeing? Like, what are your wins and losses with it so far? And then I just and they're like, oh, we had this project and we tried this and we tried that. It was a disaster. Or it's like, but then we went back and at the end we were pretty happy because we got this result, you know? And I think it's going to be so much trial and error, probably a lot more errors in many of those trials, but we'll get there. And, you know, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years from now, it's going to fundamentally transform so many businesses. And that's going to be great because it's going to increase opportunity. And, you know, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I refuse to vacate the middle. I'm not going to sit here and say that, oh my God, AI is going to da 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 da. And I'm also not going to lose any sleep over it, but tell them I'm going to be out of a job. You know, no, I'm going to play it as, you know, play the AI cards that are dealt to us in this industry and other industries, other things that we do. I'm going to try to learn from it. I'm going to try to be strategic about how I deploy it and learn with the curve as it progresses. I think that's the best any of us can do.
Yeah, I think so too. And to play with your metaphor a little bit, I think you should play the cards that you're dealt, but I think you should set the rules of the game, not AI.
Yep.
You know, I mean, I think too many people think of AI like this deity or this all-knowing genie, and it's not. It's a very sophisticated, clever computer program with access to lots of information and resources. But, you know, if you look at the number of neurons in the human brain and you do a factorial, which is a complicated math thing that I don't know how to explain, but if you connected every neuron in every combination, I don't think any AI is going to come close to that for a long time. That's my
quantum computer.
Nathan, hey. You love this topic. What do you think? Where are you? Please rejoin us. Oh my God. Did AI kidnap him? No, there he is.
I'm going to say 10 years from now, when the AI has complete control of everything and it goes back through the internet archives looking for dissenters, we're all going to be off to the AI gulag. But I agree with most of it. I will say, though, David, you and I have worked on some things behind the scenes on using AI to go over our copy and help us improve it, help us check for things that maybe we didn't see because we were stuck in the frame. And for me, that has been one of the best uses. I'm still creating the copy. I'm still writing the copy. But training it to go through and look for things that I might have missed is a very valuable use of it.
It's true. But do you retain the option to reject its suggestion? That's sort of the key question.
Absolutely. And you can see the copywriters and business owners that are not taking that option, and you can look at it. And as a copywriter, we can spot it right away. But I think the readers, the prospects, they might not spot some of the things that we are spotting, but they intuitively know it. And I think that
they feel it.
And it causes red flags that these copywriters that are relying on it completely might not know that they're setting off.
Yeah, well, AI user beware. I was trying to figure out how to translate that into Latin, but you know, I don't know Latin, so I can't do that.
Let's ask the AI.
All right. Tell us a little more about your new product, and I know you're coming back to tell us a lot more about it in a few weeks, but
thank you for asking. The two projects that Sean and I did last year, the first was called Offer Essentials Masterclass. It was how to be strategic in the frameworks that you choose when you're like, I'm gonna put out an offer. I'm gonna pursue my dream of solopreneur or my small business that I've been working on the side. How do I put something out there that helps me put my business's best foot forward? So that was the first program that we did. It's about 7 hours of content. Second one was called Sales Page Essentials. That was cold audiences, warm audiences, hot audiences, what we would call front end versus back end offers. And we pulled pages apart from a variety of different niches. What makes great offers stand out? How do you use these copy tech, just basic street level technique of persuasion, copy technique to make your offer, number one, convert, number two, stand out from everything else that's out there. So those are the two that we have in the can. The one that we have coming up by the end of April is called F3. We're calling it Full Funnel Formula. That's where three Fs, F3. And it's sort of a culmination of now you've gained an understanding of the frameworks and structures that can make an offer work. And we've looked at actual styles of copy that could be appropriate for a variety of product or service types. So now how do you put those pieces together? How do you put the fulfillment and retention structures in place? How do you, what's a funnel? If you're starting with a $49, $79, $129 offer, what's a funnel structure that makes sense that you can ascend those people quicker and give them better experience? These are the things we're going to dive into with Full Funnel Formula. It's going to be a live 8-week training. It's going to take place over the spring. So yeah, we're deep in development right now, and I appreciate you letting me talk about it for a minute, because Sean and I both are very, very excited about what we could do with this one.
Yeah, I'm excited to find out more about it too, but it's not available, so all we can do is tease. We can't offer. So we'll have to wait until it's ready, and then maybe you can come back.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
In the meantime, if our listeners dug this interview and they want to find out more about you, Aaron, where's the best place to connect or find out more about you?
It's a good question. I'd say email me, aarongensler@gmail.com. Happy to hear from anybody. Happy to have a conversation. I appreciate the feedback.
Awesome. I just want to say thank you for coming on and having a rational discussion about AI. The polarization is definitely thick out there, and we need more grounded and not so polarized discussions about this going on. So I appreciate you coming on and doing that with us today.
Thank you, guys. Yeah. I appreciate it.
All right. And if you enjoyed this episode and you want to check out more, head on over to copywriterspodcast.com. 360 plus episodes over there so far, and a wealth of knowledge that will definitely give you an advantage over the AI when it comes to your copywriting. And until next time, we will catch you later.
Catch you later. Thanks, Aaron.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Always a good time.
Hey, did you enjoy today's show? Want to help get it into the ears of more listeners? Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app.
This is the Copy and Funnels Podcast Network.